into sports.
20 yards out, Urs to shoot, don't shoot! Oh, what a goal from Fabinho! Wow!
Then get into the all-new OTB Sports app.
I think when he apologises to me, I probably will say hello to him, yeah. No, I'm...
Videos, sports news, live scores, interviews.
If Fabregas is going to come up to me in the street and give me some of the mouth that he would have given me on a football pitch, what would he do? He'd get a slap.
Plus, exclusive content on the OTB Podcast Network. The biggest names in sports. Ready when you are. Search OTB Sports on your app store and download it now.
The OTB Podcast Network.
And we're live. You're very welcome along. I want to talk a little bit about the All-Ireland Final previews that we've been doing across the week. We look back at the brilliant Waterford team of the past with Dan Shanahan and Ken McGrath. It was a great, very honest and raw chat. We spoke with Richie Hogan about what this Waterford team were like, particularly in that second half when they were in full flight. And we previewed the game with Shane McGrath, spoke matchups and the bit before the game with Paddy Stapleton. Sarah Donovan previewed Galway Kilkenny and the Camogie. All of that is on our GAA feed. You just search OTB GAA on our podcast network. You can download our app. It's free and it's all there. And that's the easiest way. Hit subscribe. And every time we update that, we can send you a little message about that as well. Tomorrow's Saturday panel, Aidan Taggy-Fogarty, Shane Dowling and Noel Connors. And then, of course, we'll have Mags Darcy and Valerie Wheeler at the All-Ireland Camogie Final. 7 o'clock, Galway against Galway against Kilkenny in Croker. And we'll have post-match audio with managers and video at Mags on all our social channels from full-time onwards. On Sunday, Shotty and Bringlodge, This Is The Dream, Tommy Walsh on All-Ireland Final Day, live from Croker, 3:30 throw-in for Limerick against Waterford. And we'll have post-match reaction rolling across all of our social channels and, of course, on the Sunday show on News Talk as well. It's with Saturday that I want to start. Galway against Kilkenny, Croke Park at 7 o'clock. And I'm delighted to say Cyril Farrell and Aisling Connolly are with us. You're both very welcome. Aisling, if I can start with you, what's the level of confidence amongst Galway Camogie fans that there's a back-to-back about to happen here?
Yeah, hi, Ger. I have to say that, Galway are the favourites going into the match on Saturday. And I guess that's the nature of the beast of being the All-Ireland final winners from last year. They are, the favourites going in this year. And it's going to be a brilliant battle. Kilkenny, have lost the last 3 All-Ireland finals in a row. Surely they're going to channel that hurt, that bitterness, that sheer disappointment into positivity and on Saturday. And, having been a player who lost 2 All-Ireland finals by 2 points to Wexford in Croke Park, it does fuel you and it does drive you and make you mentally stronger. In addition to that, you've got Kilkenny, who have got new management in place this year with Brian Dowling, a former Kilkenny hurler, and Philly Larkin, a former Kilkenny hurler as well. So they're going to bring fresh impetus into the team this year. We've seen that throughout their championship round robin campaign. So it's going to be a brilliant battle. It's going to be intense. It's going to be ferocious, and really looking forward to it. But yeah, you'd have to say that, given Galway are the All-Ireland final winners from last year, that they are favourites to win on Saturday.
Sarah, what's your take on a rematch in an All-Ireland final? As somebody who's been through that, what are the psychological dynamics at work?
Well, the only thing is, Kilkenny, okay, they've lost the last 3, but they have won, plenty before that. There would be a strong tradition in Camogie County, but it does bear on you it doesn't bear thinking about that you're going to lose another one. But after saying that, Ger, the people going in won't be worried about the past; they're just worried about this one. And they were the 6 points down that against Cork, and kind of came back from the dead in the first half, got the goals and counted and held on, kind of very physical, good, tough game. Cork were probably a bit unlucky to lose the centre back Mackay, but Kilkenny are always very hard to beat. I'd say halfway through the first half, you'd imagine that Cork were going to win it easy, and at the end, they were coming back, but still never got to do it. And Kilkenny you could see at the end of the match how delighted they were to be back in the All Ireland final, and they'll be delighted that it's Galway again. Now, Galway were impressive enough against Tip, Tip kind of a new team on the block, but Galway would have a lot of pace, whereas Kilkenny are more physical, I would think. But Galway, especially around the middle, where you have the likes of Niamh Kilkenny and Aoife Donoghue and Katrina Cormac, they're carrying, especially Donoghue and Kilkenny, they have a lot of pace, kind of carry the ball, and they will be very confident, have had a good campaign, and going in as champions, they would dearly look to put it back to back.
Yeah, that's the thing, isn't it? So whatever ghosts Kilkenny might feel from losing three in a row. There's the pressure on Galway to be the first Galway team to do the back-to-back. So maybe, Aisling, these things balance each other out, and ultimately, as soon as the match starts, none of that matters too much?
For sure, and I agree with Sarah, like, that those, a lot of those players from Kilkenny, you can't afford to look back. Like, they'll be just looking and concentrating on the match, you know, tomorrow, and, you know, bringing all the energy and focusing on that. But yeah, I agree, it balances out. But yeah, like, you'd have to say that Kilkenny have a lot of fresh blood and new blood coming into the match on Saturday versus the All-Ireland final last year. They've lost Katie Power, a major threatening forward this year due to injury. They've lost Michelle Quilty, who scored 1-9 in the 2019 final. And that threatening ability is going to definitely be something that they will need to work on to kind of replace those two danger people. Now, in saying that, Mary O'Connell was a new player, immense against Cork, having scored two brilliant points. And Miriam Walsh and Aoife Doyle, they've got 7 goals between them in this year's championship so far. So Galway's half-back line, Galway's full-back line are going to have to be really tight and really solid to, you know, to man-mark them and keep them quiet. And then you have the, you know, as Cyril touched on, our midfield of Aoife Dunhu and Niamh Kilkenny. You know, they're an absolute powerhouse. And I think that's something that Kilkenny will have to watch out for. I hope Niamh starts midfield. She was wing forward the last year. Her best position is, in my view, in midfield. And she's a big day player, player of the match last year, numerous All-Stars. That, you know, the better she plays, the better Galway play. And it's going to be very interesting to see how Kilkenny tackle and tame that midfield. Are they going to bring out their man markers like Davina Tobin, who, you know, held Amy O'Connor scoreless against Cork, and she's a brilliant player, Amy O'Connor? Are they going to bring Davina, who's fit and athletic and speedy, just like Niamh, and tame her? So, because on the other side of things, you have Kilkenny's midfield, who Cork scored 5 points from play from that midfield position. And interestingly enough, the stats showed that there was the highest turnover rate from Kilkenny was their midfield. So they lost more possession in their midfield than their attacking or in their defence. So I think that's something that they will tune into. And I'm very interested to see how, you would go ahead. Yeah.
Can you fix that?
Yeah, you can fix that. Of course you can fix that. So like, they're going to have to make sure, because what happened was the two backs were almost sacrificed. Davina Tobin was man-marked Amy O'Connor wherever she went, and Megan Farrell picked up Orla Cronin, and that created a bit of space in the forwards for Cork to attack, and that's why they got the huge start of 1-3 in the first few minutes that Cyril talked about. So then that kind of put the midfielders under pressure as a result, because you didn't have, like, you know, those girls kind of in their positions hitting out the ball, and so they will have to, you know, rectify that game plan and make sure that there isn't as much space for the Galway forwards to kind of run, you know, from midfield and into the forwards. And then you've got Anne Dalton, who's going to pick her up. Where, you know, is it going to be Katrina Cormican, who did a job on her last year in the All-Ireland final, and who is Galway's man marker? Because again, no more than Niamh Kilkenny is the leader for Galway, Anne is the leader for Kilkenny, and the better she goes, the better Kilkenny go as well. So who's going to nullify her and try and keep her quiet? Because again, you know, numerous All-Stars, player of the year a couple of years ago, and someone who got an amazing goal and tipped over a few points in the semi-final. So it's going to be, I think the middle third is going to be extremely interesting on tomorrow.
Yeah,
Saturday.
And that's kind of feeds into the point you were making earlier on about the pace, Cyril. Listening to Aisling's analysis there, you kind of feel like you would like to have pace in your midfield, particularly if that has been shown, if Cork have managed to show up Kilkenny a little bit in that. So are Galway a bad matchup in that respect for Kilkenny?
Yeah, well, I would think Galway would be stronger there, but now it will be crowded out there, like, sure, you know, they'll probably pack it. But definitely, as Aisling referred to there, I would prefer much first to see Niamh Kilkenny. Now, she'd probably be picked wing forward, but she'd play midfield herself, and Aoife Dunhu. They're two kind of like Duracell batteries really up and down the pitch, like very, very good on the ball, great skill in all movements. Now, it'll be crowded, but yet, like, if you have the pace, you've got to use it. They have real pace, like, you know, it's as you know, referring there to Anne Dalton, you don't know where, now, she might max them, but if she plays up front for four, she'll be on, you know, or say, Sarah Durbin. It's at times when you put people marking, you're taking them out of the game. Like, you have to play your own game as well. And I felt that, you know, like Cork, the last day, walked the ball through the lines very well very early on. So as only as the game went on, the Kilkenny kind of ground down. Now, Galway will try the same thing, but at this stage in time, like, Galway are very experienced. Like, and Kilkenny, I think, have nine of the players that started last year. Now, that's a big turnover in a year. I know they were beaten, but some of these would be there if they weren't injured. You know, like, so it's a big ask. They're going in as underdogs. They like that, and Galway are going in as favourites, which Galway teams in general don't act that way as favourites. But like, you're favourites because you're kind of good enough. And I really think at this stage in time, like, that they're well on course. Like, to me, they're a bit stronger than last year. Like, the McGraths are back hurling again. Like, and the Orla had a good game the last day. Siobhan didn't come on. Now, you know, these girls are kind of proven with Sarsfields and kind of great to get scores and make scores. And I think there's more of a score, a more even scoring threat, even though Miriam Say Welch and Anne Dalton are physically strong. But I just think Galway are more balanced up front, right, to get the vital score.
Before lockdown, the McGraths were going great. We'd had them on at various stages, constantly winning awards for Player of the Month and, you know, just generally reaching new levels of proficiency and excitement.
Yeah, well, like, there's three of them there, like, one was on the last in the sub-count, but there's three of them there in the panel, and they are very good. They won't weaken the team, like, and all Leicesters are there as well, so, like, it kind of makes Cahal Murray's hand very, very strong, and they won't be overconfident, but I'd say deep down they will feel that if they get their game going, and if Kilkenny gets their game going, that, like, Galway should be still good enough to win, because they are the team possession, and they are the strongest team, like, you know, for the start of the year, I would think themselves, Cork and Kilkenny are the three strongest rounds. The rest are kind of playing catch-up, but definitely, I think Paul would feel that they're the best team around.
Yeah, and look, I think the last point on this, Aisling, before we move on to the hurling final, the rivalry, particularly that little bit of nastiness that was between Cork and Kilkenny for a couple of years, that sustained things. Having Galway at the same level and winning All Ireland and driving those other counties now so that there's three or four counties, that's what we need. We absolutely need jeopardy when we're watching these matches to not know who's going to win, for them to be competitive and for different teams to win, different stars to emerge.
Yeah, well, there's no doubt about that. Like, at the moment, you have Galway, Kilkenny, Cork. Now, Tipperary are kind of coming again. Waterford, I saw them there earlier on, was it last year, and even Offaly kind of coming through as well. But the more teams you have at the top, the better it is for Camogie in general. And you want, if you had about five or six who were capable of winning All Ireland, to be fantastic every year. But usually what happens during Camogie is a team comes, say, a few years ago to a state before that, like, a team comes for a while, gets their run at it, and then win their few All-Irelands if they can, and then they're gone, they come and go. But, like, the standard, you'd have to say, has gone very, very high, and the level of fitness and the level of preparation is as good as any of the GAA teams. Like, they're putting as much to the side, it's the very same thing, and, like, the skill is very high. These can, you know, like, at the moment, you have people, even in the Camogie matches, putting balls over the bar, and that's the same as said, like, Joe Cannon, which is great to see, like, you know, Rebecca Henley from Galway, and in Camogie, they count for 2 points, so, you know, it's a big score if they can score one or two of them, like, that it counts two points scores for four, so yeah. It's a great asset to have.
No, 100%.
Yeah, exactly. And just a special mention as well to Westmeath, again, a new county that's up and coming. In the last couple of years, they've won junior, they've won the intermediate All-Ireland final, and then they won, you know, they got to the senior this year, and they beat Limerick in the championship. So it's great, you know, to see these new teams coming up, and it showcases the game. And that's what we want. We want diversity, we want inclusion. The more girls and the more, you know, men that can see the great athleticism and the skills that these girls have, the better. And I'd shout out to anyone who's listening, to, you know, any dads out there who plan to sit down with their little sons or their daughters on Sunday to watch All-Ireland final, like, do the same tomorrow for the Camogie at 7, because it's so brilliant to be exposed to female athletes. And as Cyril say, the skill level that these girls, all of them, are going to show tomorrow, whether it's sideline cuts over the bar, amazing goals or free taking, it's going to be an epic battle. And, you know, they're great role models for our younger generation, be it little girls or little boys. And I'd encourage as many bums on seats as possible and as many fathers or uncles to sit down with their young girls and their young boys and show them the game tomorrow, on Saturday, because it is going to be a really high-class act.
Yeah, and 7 o'clock primetime viewing, good opportunity to push the sport into new territories. And maybe this is the future as well, you know, the Saturday evening fixtures might be something that we've stumbled into because of COVID, and think, yeah, we'll keep that. Thanks very much. I do want to chat about the men's final on Sunday. Am I right in saying, Aislinn, you're Limerick based? Have you got a sense of hype?
I am Limerick.
She has to wear them.
No. Home is where the heart is, and I'm a true and true Galway person. But yes, I am. I'm living in Adair in Limerick, and yeah, there is a sense of the county has really gotten behind the team, and they've put up their flags, and they've, you know, there's a lot of bunting and, you know, colours around. And here in Adair, there's a big huge flag outside one of the pubs, Big Al's, and that, you know, the Christmas tree is all done up in green lights in the town. But yeah, it's a strange one, isn't it? Like, it's weird. We're going to be sitting down watching it, you know, in our sitting room, and then the Christmas tree is right beside us. So it's a unique year. That's for sure, and you'd wonder how the both teams are preparing for it and who it's going to benefit more. You'd have to argue that, you know, Waterford are going to benefit more, having not been as used to the level of success that Limerick have had over the last couple of years. That the lack of hype, the lack of the noise in Croke Park on All-Ireland Final Day, the lack of, you know, the bonanza around tickets, like, none of that is happening at the moment. No talk of banquets, none of that kind of crap that goes on, I guess. And you'd have to wonder, are Waterford, is that going to give them a slightly advantage in that they can just go in and they can just play their game and take it like just any other game, because they do have a lot of new players, whereas Limerick would be more used to that hype. So it'll be very interesting to see how it pans out. It's definitely going to be an intense and ferocious battle, and Waterford, I guess, like, Limerick are known for their intensity and their work rate and their tackling and their turnover rate, and no team to the, you know, over the last couple of years have been doing that, apart from, I guess, Kilkenny. But Waterford now, with Mikey Bevins as the coach, like, he's known for his tackling, he's known for the intensity and ferociousness that he brings to the players. So I expect to see, you know, a really intense battle, lots of tackling, lots of hard hits going in, and it's going to make for a great match.
Yeah, Sarah, you can read this a million different ways in terms of, like, trying to predict what's going to happen. It's very difficult listening to everybody to see precise patterns emerging in the analysis that makes you feel confident in predicting one side or the other, because I've literally heard a very eloquent case be made for both teams and how they're going to ride the matchups and how actually the styles of the two teams match up well in favour of both of them. And I've heard people who really know their hurling explain this to me. So what's your theory? Let's have your theory about what's going to happen.
Yeah, well, like, the thing is, Gerard, like, from the start of the year, Limerick would be favourites to win the All-Ireland. They feed themselves that they let one slip last year. Now, they won it the year before, so they feel that they should be going for three in a row. Now, it's the best Limerick team for ages, maybe the best Limerick team ever, which is hard to compare other teams. But they put this one there, like, again, that would be up at the top Limerick teams, and they will feel that even though they're winning, Gerard, that they haven't really fully clicked. You know what I mean? Fully clicked. They play through the lines. They're very good at giving these 20, 30-yard passes with the stick when they're in tight to give hand passes. And it's the first pass. When they get the first pass right, they come in kind of triangles. The next two or three go right. So Walsh will be kind of concentrating not to let the first pass come perfect. If they can half stop the first pass, the pass, and it doesn't come correct, they have a great chance. Now, the Limerick half back line has been kind of, you know, all year kind of going along. They've been kind of laying down the law. When they get on top, they're very, very hard to, you know, to stop. You have Jimmy Burns, Hannon, and Kyle Hayes now. They're very, very good going forward. And the same with the half forward line, where they work back. Hegarty, Lynch, maybe centre forward, Morrissey. So the Waterford half back line are going to have to go man to man with the Limerick half forward line when they go deep, which they will go deep. Also, the Waterford half forward line will be out midfield as well. So midfield, where you have Jamie Barron filing on all cylinders, you know, Kieran Binnett is out there, Montgomery came on the last day. They're going to have a big, it's going to be very, very tight in the middle third, because Ty DeBorca will step back. He will be back in what we call the pocket, just outside the D to stop the goals going through. That's the way he's going to play. Now, Watford have to decide, are they going to move up in the puck out and then switch back a sweeper, or do they leave a man loose for every ball up front? If they do, if they leave a man loose, Limerick will try to work it through the lines. But like, they've played two or three times this year, Watford kept going closer and closer. And I would think going into the Munster final, Ger, that Watford, knowing the two boys over them, Cahill and Bevan, they would say, look, we're good enough to win this. Now, maybe the team deep down, hard to believe that you're not winning all these matches. But after the match, they would have said, now look, lads, look what we could have done. We ran them to 4 points. We could have won this game if we fully believed. They're in a good position going in. But Limerick will still feel that they haven't really put teams away. Even the last day against Galway, well out hurled in spots, Limerick completely on top, and yet I think on the 72nd or third minute it was level. They're not putting teams away, mainly because they're not getting goals. So like, they'll be trying to get one or two with him, but Watford have big decisions during the since. Do they play Montgomery, who played very well when he came on? Do they start Shane Fives, who's been injured, because Kinney has been playing okay cornerback? Fives would have been the regular cornerback. There are two decisions they have to make, and I suppose Limerick are waiting on the fitness of Gillam, but Limerick have an ace up their sleeve in the sense that Peter Casey doesn't weaken any team. Like, you know, he'd be on nearly every team, even though he wasn't on the last day for Limerick, but when he came on, he's not weakening. So there's going to be great matchups, but it's the middle third, you know, and probably whoever gets the goals. But to me, at the whole time, like, we'll be 31 counties hoping for Watford to make a breakthrough, but I still think that Limerick are in the driving seat.
Yeah, I can understand that too. The point about Limerick not clicking just yet, it kind of is the story that everybody has accepted. And yet, when you look back, it was 36 points the first day out against Clare. It was 323 against Tipperary. And OK, so the game against Waterford, they kind of controlled that in the Munster final. I think maybe we underrated Galway a little bit this year. And so, in saying that Limerick didn't put them away, like, Galway were the All-Ireland finalists. Galway were All-Ireland champions 3 years ago and 2 years ago. Like, they're a great team and they still have really great players. So maybe Limerick are a slightly bit higher level than we have given them credit for.
Yeah, and you have to remember as well, like, that Limerick seem to be getting better with every game that goes. And, you know, they've had a brand new fullback this year, Dan Morrissey, and a brand new cornerback in Barry Nash, who would never have been considered a cornerback. And they're really, the first game there was against Clare, there was a little bit of a dodginess, you could say, but since then they have really nailed down and cemented those positions, and you know, they've really held their own, so they've really, you know, made a difference. And also, like, Kyle Hayes going back into wing back has been a revelation, and I think it's going to be really interesting, the battle that himself and Fagan are going to have, because they're both brilliant in the air, they're both, you know, really physical and, you know, attacking. So it's going to be really interesting how that pans out. But yeah, like, against Galway, to say what kind of Cyril was saying, like, they left Galway in it for longer than they should have, and they kind of should have, you know, put them away, or they should have, you know, in all honesty, like, as a Galway woman, I thought that Limerick could have won that match by much more. So it's going to be interesting to see how they click. And I think there's a big match left in Limerick. I don't think they have clicked or gelled as much as they would have done in terms of their fluency that they've showed in the last couple of years. And, you know, their striking rate is against Galway was only 55%. So out of about 36 shots, they only scored 20, which is, you know, a poor enough return for that amazing half forward line that Sarah was talking about. So they'll be working on that, and they'll be working on their goal threats. But, you know, Peter Casey and Mulcahy were very strong in the Munster final, and they are, I know Graham Mulcahy, we didn't have a great game against Galway, he was well marked, but I expect that they will run at them, and they'll, if Limerick get off to a strong start, which I anticipate that they're going to try go for, and they're going to try and be threatening in the first few minutes and put, you know, goals potentially on the scoreboard, well then it's very hard to see Waterford kind of coming back from that, despite their big claw back against Kilkenny in the semi-final. But if Limerick start strong and don't have a, you know, they started very slowly against Kilkenny last year in the semi-final, they went out of it, Kilkenny went Limerick went out of it against Galway in the 2017-18 final in the second half. So if Limerick can start strong and then maintain that consistency, you know, and that concentration for the whole game, it's hard to see them being bet.
Yeah, that's the thing. Absolutely. But they do also have those streaks in matches in them where it feels almost as if it comes too easy in some ways. And all of a sudden we have a game on, and maybe that's what happened against Galway as well. So it does sound like you're both predicting Limerick wins here. Cyril, how do Waterford, what do they need to happen for that not to happen? For what's supposed to happen not to happen? What do Waterford need?
Yeah, well, I think if Waterford can play like they did against Kilkenny in the second half, like, they were very tentative against Kilkenny in the first half, and there's one stage there, they were down 9 points. Now, the few points they got before half-time, no one mentioned them much at all against Kilkenny, but they were vital. So they only went in 7 points down. Now, it looked a lot in Hurling, but in actual fact, in Hurling, it's not that much at all. Now, they came out, and the big thing was the second half that threw caution to the wind. They actually beat Kilkenny in the air, who are the kind of the kings of the air in Hurling. And it's very hard to do. They threw caution, and they went at them, and they used their pace. And the next thing, like, it's hard to see. Not many teams come from seven down to get, usually when Kilkenny get seven up, they'll put you out the gate altogether. But this is Waterford at their best, coming free-flowing, hurling, attacking from, you know, from midfield, coming in droves, everyone running with the ball, lapping. And the big thing was, when there was a chance of a goal or a point, they were going for goal. If it was 50-50 or even 60-40, they were going for broke. Whereas Limerick had been playing, getting high points and kind of quite content to tap them over. You could find on Sunday, now that will all change. But if Waterford can bring that 70 minutes, for the, you know, as they did against Kilkenny in the second half. But Limerick are still a very kind of, you know, very good hurlers, very good game plan, are used to the game plan inside out. Waterford very much like them, but maybe not down the road as much. Like, to be fair to Liam Cahill, he's done a fantastic job, but he's only there a few months. Like, I'd say at the start of the year, if you said to Liam Cahill, you know, you're going to be good enough to get into an All-Ireland, he'd say, God, that's fantastic article. Like, he'd take it with two hands. Now they're there, they want to win it. And to be, you know, to be unbelievable to get first kind of season in, to get an All-Ireland and to win, it'd be unbelievable altogether. Whereas John Kiley's team, they're more settled. So you'd still manage, you'd still feel that experience should get them over the line.
Yeah. Now look, it has all the hallmarks of a classic. Last point on this, Ashton, the quality of hurling that we've seen under the conditions. And you think of the 36 points, I mentioned them earlier, that Limerick scored. The rain was howling in from the Atlantic that night, and yet they were kind of pucking around like they were on a beach in Brazil. The quality of the hurling that we've seen Tony Kelly be a sorcerer. Like, this has been a very strange championship, the green and white lights on the Christmas tree notwithstanding. I'm pretty glad that they managed to get it organised and run it off, and here we are on the brink of an All-Ireland final.
We are so lucky, Ger, that we have this to look forward to. You know, during lockdown, it was the beacon of light at the weekends, Saturdays and Sundays, having matches to watch. And, you know, even going into the shops or the butchers or going in at the school gates, whatever it was, at least you had something different to talk about, whether it was the Camogie matches or the Hurling matches. And, you know, I know there is disappointment in that families can't go to Croke Park, and, you know, what are the winning teams going to do, and there's going to be no homecoming, and after 61 years, what happens if Waterford wins it, etc., etc. But it is what it is. We're in a global pandemic, and we have to just take any positives out of it that we can. And for one thing is for sure, that there's been a lot of positives out of these matches being shown, and Croke Park have done as good a job as they can. And I'm just grateful that we have these matches to watch. It's no, we're not having the buzz of being in the Croke Park Hotel before or after the game or the hype in Croke Park, but it's an unusual year. But I'm just grateful and thankful that we have these matches to watch at the weekend. And, you know, for, especially for elderly people, you know, watching them at the weekends and then reading, you know, the and listening to the post-match interviews and, you know, the papers on the Mondays and Tuesdays, you know, it gives that bit of comfort, and it helps with the loneliness that we're all, that a lot of people are experiencing. So it's just brilliant overall to have these matches, both from the Camogie and the Hurling. And we have to take, there's lots of downsides, but there's also positives, and we have to take the positives out of the situation and dwell on those. And yeah, so it's definitely an unusual year.
Hopefully the vaccine rolls out and we're all back in proper form.
Yeah. Sure, before you go there, if you just think of what Ashley is saying there, if you think of four players this year, the skill they've shown, like the Tony Kelly, Joe Cannon, TJ Reid, Stephen Bennett, now not picking out for Limerick, them four already as forwards, like the skill they've shown, like you'd stand in the snow to look at them, like they've been unbelievable for this, as you would say, even this time of the year, unbelievable.
And Richie Hogan's Messi-esque goal as well. There was one last thing that actually, obviously there was controversy last week around the LGFA and the fixtures, but the conversation immediately afterwards turned to the amalgamation of the three separate organisations. As far as I know, Camogie were actually in favour of it. and it ended up being the Central Council of the LGFA under Liam O'Neill that voted against it, and so it didn't go any further. Do you have any thoughts on this, Aisling, the way things are going and where it needs to go?
Yeah, I would be in favour of amalgamation, and surely there's, you know, benefits to having economies of scale and being, you know, under one umbrella, and you know, you don't have any breakdown in communication issues then because you're all in the one organisation. So what happened last week with the Galway and Cork ladies footballers, it was far from ideal. It wasn't televised. That was no fault to the TV crowd, but it just, you know, it would never happen in a male game, and it's not like we're expecting like for like or the same level of attendance, etc. But it comes down to a respect issue, and that, you know, finding out at 11 o'clock that your venue has changed is not on, and being rushed to warm up and to rush to tug out in the dressing room is not on when you're preparing for this all year and putting in savage intensity, savage in work rate on the pitch, off the pitch, to you know, reach the pinnacle of a semi-final and not be able to play and plan properly. It's not okay. And what happened was could have been avoided. And so I would be very much in favour of having everything under the one umbrella and under the one roof, because, you know, there would be benefits to that, massive benefits.
Massive benefits, I would say, Cyril, too, for the GAA, just the injection of female talent and an alternative view. Like, it is an organisation that is far too male.
Oh, yeah, well, if you like, at least, you know, the ladies are coming into being, say, in the sports, even in RT and Sky and the whole lot, they're doing that. Like, but, like, yeah, Aisling is right, like, it would be a great benefit. But, like, they have to get their house in order as well. Like, it always surprises me that we have a Camogie final out tomorrow and there's going to be male referees. And our All-Ireland football lady finally be another male referee. Like, they should have their own referees, they should have their own lines people, they should have their own umpires. And, like, definitely it would make sense if it was all under one organisation. Okay, you're going to lose councillors or members of that sort of thing, but, like, for an association to agree that, okay, it was called off in Torres because Cork could with the Camogie in football, but then they'd agree to go to Limerick, get Limerick, and if Limerick didn't qualify for the All-Ireland final. Well, that was a big if. And then, like, to get thrown into Parnell Park, and then that was closed down. Like, the whole lot, there was a lot of pitches in between. Like, bringing Cork and Galway to Dublin, you know, like, yeah. You know, there's so much in between that could have been done. But, like, I would love, like, the things that they could be doing or should be doing, they don't, like, definitely tomorrow in the All-Ireland Camogie final, nothing against the referee that's there. He's a good referee, strict enough maybe on the kind of carrying rule, on the oversteps. But, like, there's no lady referee. You know, and they have plenty of, they say they haven't got them. All they have to do is train them. You know, there's plenty of
They used to have them, because my aunt refereed two All-Ireland finals, Camogie finals, while she was still playing, to be honest. And so I don't know what happened that they didn't manage to keep that going.
What year is your Bambo chair?
I'm talking about the 60s. It was...
it's way back. Like, in modern times, it's just, look, there's nothing. Like, I'm just saying, for their own association, they should have their own lines, people, umpires and referees. The ladies having their own, you know.
Right, well, look, we've opened a can of worms. It wasn't my intention to, but, like, there's plenty more for us to talk about there. Enjoy both games this weekend, folks. It's been brilliant chatting to you and spending some time in your company. My thanks to Aisling Connolly and to Cyril Farrell for giving us his thoughts today.
The OTB Podcast Network.